This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
We are awaiting an update on the Brown University shooting. What I'm really wondering is, was this young woman who is the Republican Club vice president, was she targeted for her political beliefs? That's what I want to know and what I want to find out. And I think you want to find out as well. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. Appreciate you being here. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. And of course, we also have the president giving his address tonight to the nation and wondering what he's going to say tonight. Will it be about the economy? Will it be that? I mentioned before that at least one Republican joined with Democrats on Obamacare extension. And of course, I said, can you guess who it could be? And of course, that's Brian Fitzpatrick from our very own area. Four House Republicans joined Democrats on Wednesday to force a House vote on a straight three-year extension on the enhanced Obamacare tax credits that will expire December 31st, delivering a sharp rebuke to Speaker Mike Johnson and other Republican leaders. Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, Mike Lawler of New York, Rob Bresnahan of Pennsylvania, and Ryan McKenzie of Pennsylvania signed the discharge petition filed by House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries hours after the GOP leaders rejected attempts by Fitzpatrick and other Republican moderates to seek a floor vote on extending the subsidies used by more than 20 million Americans. Fitzpatrick said in a late night House Rules Committee meeting Tuesday that the only thing worse than a clean extension would be expiration, and I would make that decision. Lawler added that the only feasible path forward is a discharge petition if GOP leaders reject a floor vote. So that's where that is right now. We have worked for months to craft a two-party solution to address these expiring health care credits. Our only request was a floor vote on this compromise so that the American people's voice could be heard on this issue. That request was rejected. Unfortunately, it is House leadership themselves that have forced the outcome. The bill, however, is unlikely to advance in the Senate. So this is what we call grandstanding, because it's not going to go anywhere in the Senate. Four GOP senators voted to advance a three-year extension alongside Democrats last week. The proposal fell short of the necessary 60 votes to proceed. Senate Majority Leader John Thune was dismissive when asked Monday if he would take up a similar bill if the House sent one over. He said, if they just did what they did over here, which is a straight-up three-year extension, then no. He was asked the same question on Wednesday and said, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Even if the Senate does not take up a House pass extension, it could build pressure on Thune and Johnson to take action on some sort of extension when lawmakers return to Washington next month. Now, why is this happening right now? What's going on? What's the situation here? You know, the reality is that you are looking at Republicans trying to negotiate an amendment vote, and they're trying to get something out of this rather than just, again, kick the can down the road, as Chip Roy said today earlier. And this is what we always do. You know, we just say, okay, we're panicking and we're just going to extend the health care subsidies, get nothing out of it. And we don't want to make people upset, and we want to go home as quickly as possible to our constituents. So we just want to get this done. And even though we're in power, we're not going to get anything out of it. And we're not going to make any reforms, and we're not going to save the American people any money. We're not going to do any of those things. And, you know, I what's the point of being in power then? Honestly, what's the point of being in power? If you're just going to keep the same things and you're not going to do any reforms, you're not going to utilize the power that you have to actually implement reforms to Obamacare. You're just going to keep the subsidies going because you're panicking. then what's the point of having control? All right, they're going to the Brown University shooting update. We're going to jump into this right now so we can hear this. I'm very interested if this young woman was targeted based on her politics. Can we go to that, guys?
Yep.
One thing that I want to mention, I want to urge you, the public, not to rely on or circulate AI-generated images that are currently being shared on social media, as they're not verified or credible. As well, the updates and information that you're getting will be provided exclusively through this department's official channels. I want to make sure that we make that happen, and please notify the public to make sure that that occurs. I would also like to clarify and show a map. Please, if you can play the map. So the map here that you see is actually a map of the area that we have been intensively walking on those streets, canvassing the area. So as you see the blue image, yesterday I mentioned that we need the public's assistance to check their camera assistance or any sort of video that you may have that could be helpful to us, that you, as you're watching it or as you're reviewing it, you feel there may be something that we can use, please notify us. And if you need any help with that, viewing those videos, please also call us. We can come over and help you. The green area, that's color, that's when we have confirmed where the subject was prior to the shooting. The red areas, we have also confirmed that that's the immediate area where he left after the shooting. And so this is the map that actually we have so far. We walked it all. We're still actively investigating, and we're still actively having agents, Providence police officers, members of the state police. There's about 9 federal agencies that are assisting us with this investigation, adding the state police as well as the Providence police and other municipalities. Again, I would like to reiterate, if you have any tips, please call the 272-3121 or the FBI link at fbi.gov/Brown University shooting. Thank you.
Attorney General Peter Nerona for an update. Okay, thank you, General. One additional update for me, and then we'll be happy to take your questions. First, I want to just take a moment to recognize and honor the memory of Ella Cook and Muhammad Aziz Umerzakov, who are the two deceased victims from this tragedy, and update you on the status of the survivors. Yesterday, we mentioned that one individual had been discharged. I'm happy to report that another individual has been discharged today. That leaves one survivor in critical but stable condition and 5 in stable conditions. The parents that I spoke with today all reported that their kids were improving. So this is a happy announcement. But I know the entire Providence community, the entire state of Rhode Island, the governor and I were together at a memorial service last night, mourn the loss and offer our most sincere condolences to the Cook and Umerzakov families. Following up on a note that the colonel made with respect to AI-generated images and other misinformation, we have created a online folder with all of the video and images that have been released. And we encourage both members of the press, but also members of the community. We know lots of people are sharing information, and we appreciate that. We think that will help with this investigation. But we encourage them to download and share the videos and photos from the website that has been created so that you can ensure that you're sharing an accurate and verified photo and video. That website is now live. It is providenceri.gov/tips, T-I-P-S. providenceri.gov/tips is an online file folder that has the videos and photos that have been released to date, and it will be updated as we progress. There's been lots of conversation up here about the heroic work of the hundreds of law enforcement professionals who remain hard at work 24 hours a day and who are in fact making progress. I want to close with one additional thank you tonight. All of those tip line calls are coming into the city's telecommunications department, the same folks who answer the 911 calls, and they too have been working tirelessly. And I want to thank the men and women at dispatch and at telecommunications for their diligence. Everyone in the city of Providence truly has a role to play in this investigation, and we're grateful for their assistance. We'll take your questions. John.
Colonel, I have a question for Colonel regarding the map. As he's walking around, I want to establish actually, what's the earliest that this person of interest emerges? I believe you had said Saturday morning at 10:30, but then someone else said maybe a couple days earlier. And I recognize that it fluctuates and this is evolving. But as of right now, what's the earliest that this individual, to your knowledge, shows up on camera?
About 10:30 a.m. on the date of this tragic incident. However, so like anything else, I also mentioned yesterday that they do case the areas. They do a lot of prior check-in for their crime. And so we truly believe that it could be that possibly it was there prior as well. And so we want to make sure that we don't miss anything. And so that's why we're asking the public to help us to ensure within that map area that I mentioned, with the borders between Wickerton, Brook, all those areas, Gaino, that if you have a camera system, to reach out to us.
I was in along I Street, Gaino today. Tremendous number of federal officials literally going door to door. Would you say this? How would you describe? I mean, it just seems that this is probably right now the most massive, intensive manhunt going on in the world.
I think I agree with you on that, John, and definitely commend the men of the men and women, obviously, and all our federal partners. It's a lot of work, and it's intense, as you stated. It takes a lot to be able to knock on doors, see videos, the terabytes of videos that you have to look, and I mentioned it yesterday. We're looking for a moment that takes almost less than a second. And if you miss it, you're missing something that could be critical and important for us to use. And so, yes, it's definitely an intense, and I believe that is probably the most intense investigation going on right now in this nation.
Colonel, the second person that you want to talk to, can you drill down at all on any interactions that you believe you may have had with the main person of interest? Do you believe he talked to him? How close was he to him? Any interactions, what can you tell him?
So, yeah, we have video footage that determines to us and the detectives that can tell that this person was in the vicinity where the subject of interest was that we actually have an interest on.
Close
enough that we feel that we need to speak with them to find out what, because videos don't speak. If you think about it, I wish the video could speak, and then I'll have the answers that we need to, so that we can continue on this investigation. So we're trying to find out exactly what it is, and that's why we need to speak with them. Please.
Have anything to do with why the person of interest was seen running in the surveillance footage?
Again, I wish the videos could speak. We're trying to get those answers.
And have you found any items of interest during your search, specifically clothing?
Nothing as we speak, no.
Up front here.
Who among law enforcement or other first responders was first on the scene that day, and who came next?
So Brown University was on scene, and then immediately the Providence Police Department within minutes was there.
Back there. Green jacket.
We recently released a video from 2:16 on the day of the shooting where we see the person of interest come into contact or near another person. Is that the moment that you think this new person and the person of interest might have come close?
That's correct. That's around the area of Benevolent and Cook.
So behind the Rhode Island Historical Society, that corner of Georgia?
Right near that area, correct.
And you had some searches going on in North Attleboro today. Is that connected at all to this case?
I can't confirm. We're all over the place. If a tip comes in and he needs us to go down to Connecticut, we're going down to Connecticut. If a tip comes in and tells us that we got to go to Boston, we're going to Boston.
Right there in the middle of the green jacket. Go ahead.
Is it possible that the second person could become a person of interest?
All we know is that that person was in the vicinity of the subject that we have an interest on, and we want to speak with them.
Yes,
Yes, so pretty much the question is just if we can explain in Spanish exactly why we're looking for this individual, why do we want to speak with them. So esta persona verdaderamente es alguien que no tenemos interés de hablar con ellos porque estaba en la área inmediata donde este individuo estaba. Entonces queremos saber más de qué, por qué estaba ahí, para explicar la razón y qué interacción hubo.
¿Tienen algún indicativo de que la persona que cometió el tiroteo actuó sola o actuó con alguien más?
Eso es lo que estamos investigando.
My question is, have you found any DNA evidence from the crime scene or the area that you believe might belong to the shooter?
So we have found a lot of evidence that we need to, and we use and utilize it to hopefully guide us in the right direction in order to identify the individual that we're looking for.
Any of that been DNA evidence?
This actual physical evidence, there's DNA evidence, there's a lot of evidence that we're collecting to ensure that we can find the answer.
Pat. I got a question for Attorney General Noronha. My understanding from your conversations over the last few days is that the Attorney General's office is taking the lead in terms of doing the investigation. My question is, what's the relationship between the Attorney General's office and the Rhode Island State Police, that we haven't heard much from over the last few days, in terms of who's doing what and what type of content? And I do have a follow-up.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that we're leading it. I think that we are working closely with our law enforcement investigators. So you divide, I think you can divide in a case like this, the people involved into two groups. So there are at least five prosecutors that have been here since Saturday night. I've been here for a fair chunk of it myself, particularly after hours back at the office. But what those prosecutors are doing, Pat, is asking questions, helping to narrow and inform factual inquiries. Certainly when there's a question, all right, do we have enough to get a search warrant for a house or a car or a buckle swab from a person of interest? They're informing that. So in any complex investigation, both federally and stateside, prosecutors are embedded with the investigative team, and we bring our own heads to the investigation because we have been involved in writing search warrant affidavits and arrest warrant affidavits and wiretaps for years.
And the Rhode Island State Police, what kind of role have they played in terms of investigating? And I still have
The Colonel can answer that. But before you do, Colonel, I just want to make sure that I answer it as well. One of the images that I have most keenly in my mind from a couple nights ago is a state police lieutenant or Derek Melfi talking to John Primiano of the Providence Police, talking to Colin Woods of the FBI, and identifying a certain piece of video evidence that's important in this investigation. And that's how intertwined and cohesive it is while prosecutors look on and engage at the same time.
So I addressed this question a couple of days ago. So this is a very collaborative effort between all of law enforcement, between the Providence Police, the State Police, all of our federal partners. We will continue to develop leads and follow that with the evidence that comes along with that until this perpetrator is apprehended.
Great, thank you. I have one quick follow-up for the gentleman from Brown University. Can you say for the record and with complete certainty that every bit of digital mass surveillance, whatever type of evidence was collected by the infrastructure of Brown University, has been turned over to the Providence Police Department as well as the Attorney General's office? Is the Brown University withholding anything for the record?
For the record, we are cooperating 100% with law enforcement. We are turning over everything we have to assist in this investigation.
And you have a map, and they are fully aware of whatever surveillance is being taken.
All materials are being provided to law enforcement.
Okay. Tom.
Mayor, thank you very much. Regarding the new person of interest video, who may have had contact with the primary person? Does law enforcement not have the capability to identify and find someone when you have like full face recognition without exposing them to public scrutiny?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's something where you have to investigate. If you don't know who that person is, it's very difficult, and especially if the image is blurred, it's very difficult to identify him. And so if we had that availability to be able to identify him without the assistance of the public, we would. So at this point, we do not, and that's why we're putting it out to the public. to assist us in identifying who this person is.
And then with this person of interest that you're looking at today, or this subject that you released today, are we sure it's a man? I know it was brought up in the question before that it could be a man, but are we 100% sure it's a man, or could it be a woman as well?
It's a person that we would like to at least speak with.
But you know, there's no giving a gender at this time?
No,
there isn't. Colonel, there's a black satchel that the main person of interest was carrying. In some images, he is seen with it. Some images, he is seen without it.
Sorry, man.
Have you recovered that black satchel? Do you know if he, can you tell us whether he was wearing that, he strapped over his shoulder?
Yes.
Was he wearing it before the shooting, after the shooting?
He's wearing it at times, definitely on and off, and I think I addressed that yesterday. Obviously, that we see him in the video with it, and then at times we don't see him, just like you stated. So we're assuming that he actually hid it under the coat that he was wearing, but we don't have it, no.
Patrick.
Colonel Perez.
Yes.
The map that you showed, it looks like the perimeter has moved south into the Fox Point area from the immediate places where we've seen video footage. Can you tell me why the level of interest has moved south of the shooting site and into the Fox Point area? Is there any video footage? Is there additional evidence that points towards that area?
I mean, the investigation is intensive, so we're following his path. And he's getting us, the last place we saw him was right at Ives near Pittman. And so that's sort of south, and we're going to continue to check, but that's the last place that we saw him. That's why we moved south, and we may continue to move. It all depends. We want to see as far as we can, how far we can go to identify him.
Are there any other sightings or anything else down by you that you've extended all the way to like Wickenham, where we don't have any?
Correct. We're at Ives and Pittman right now, but potentially could lead us further down. Further down to Butler, it can lead us further down south. So we just want to make sure we cover enough.
Steve.
Colonel, can you now just explain to us 5 days later how many students were in that classroom? Sadly, two lost their lives. 9 others injured. Encouraged about the update today. But can you now say how many kids were in that classroom? And did the gunman come in from the back so these people never knew it was coming? Or did he come in front with full view of everybody?
And that's all part of the interviews, and actually we're cooperating with Brown to get the roster. That was a study hall, so we don't have the number. We're still getting information as far as who was there. I know Brown sent out an email to the students to notify us if they were present, and we're still getting that, so I can't give you an exact account now.
Okay, and then just a follow-up. You did say that you lost sight of the gunman at some specific road.
Correct.
Outside your perimeter. What?
No, it's within the perimeter, Steve. Yeah.
Right. And then what happened with him after that? There's no, you have no video where he could have gone.
We're still out there as we speak. There's people out there, there's detectives out there, there's task force officers. We're trying to figure out what are the locations we can find, but we haven't found anything else. So, but we're knocking on doors and making sure, and that's why I'm putting out the call to the public to assist us. If you happen to be within that box that borders exactly where we want you to look, then that's exactly why we're here.
Second room.
Yeah.
Inside the classroom, you've done your interviews, you've continued your interviews. The description that eyewitnesses are giving, does it match the primary person of interest? And what can you say more about the weapon? You know that the TA said that he saw a gun that was so big and so long. Is it possible at this point that the gunman had multiple weapons? Can you swear that?
Yeah, there's definitely, the interviews are definitely telling us that that's the description that we have. And yes, they're describing the weapon. Some people obviously can think it was chaos. And so, but we're definitely getting some info as far as what the weapon looked like and exactly what was going on in that room. So
you don't think there's multiple weapons?
No, just that individual.
And, I just want to jump in here too, because you mentioned a long gun. We are not in a position to say, unless the chief, you want to square it, whether this was a long gun or not. I think that there's been an account from the TA. There are multiple accounts about multiple things, including how this gunman approached the victims. Those are not details that advance the investigation. Why not? They don't advance the investigation because as we interview witnesses, we don't want them to learn facts from these press conferences. We want them to relay the facts that they have in their heads, including a person of interest. So we don't want a person of interest to shape what they're telling us based on on what we know as expressed to you about those kinds of details, sir, that you asked. So we're being careful about the facts that we're sharing for that reason, so that when we talk to witnesses, what we're getting is their factual recitation. And as you might imagine, in a situation where there is chaos, and look, people are ducking for cover as well they should have, you are going to get different accounts, and part of what's going on now is reconciling those accounts. And I don't know, Chief, if you want to weigh in more about the weapon, but I don't want anyone to leave this room thinking that this weapon was a long gun, because that would be a misperception from what I know.
Alex.
In the video release...
It's like chaos with these guys.
It appears that the person of interest is going by a police cruiser that has its lights on. Does that mean that the dash cam in that cruiser was on and activated, and have police been able to recover anything useful from that video?
So that was a brown police cruiser, and I'm not sure if they have body cameras in their cruisers.
You're not sure?
Dash.
How are you not sure?
Okay.
I don't want to answer
my next
chief.
Follow-up question would be, are you working with flock camera experts to try and recover anything from...
So as you know, we work with Flock. We have LPRs in the city, and we're utilizing every resource we can. Yes, Alex. Yeah.
Brian.
Colonel, you mentioned that there is other evidence, but at this point, how much of this investigation turns on the public identifying who's...
This is like the Keystone Cops, these guys, I'm telling you.
Are you discouraged or surprised that after a couple of days of being out there, you haven't gotten anything more concrete?
No, I think this is, like we said it earlier, it's a very intense investigation, and I think it's going to take public assistance.
All right, we can jump out of this. Thank you very much. It's not, just like yesterday's useless. How do you not know if the cop cars had cameras? How do you not know if they were body cam? How do you not know that? That's number one. There's 50 million cameras in every neighborhood now. Everybody's got a Ring camera, doorbell, and we keep seeing the same friggin' B-roll footage of this shooter. So we don't know anything. I'll tell you what, there's a lot of frustration with the people handling this investigation right now. A lot of frustration. That chief yesterday who breaks out in Spanish in the middle of his press conference, and it's literally like the Keystone Cops. So I don't know. And as you know, as time goes on, they always say it gets harder and harder to solve these things. But with this crew, I don't know if you're going to ever solve this thing. All right. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to preview President Trump's economic speech tonight, assuming that's what he's talking about as well. Plus, the crazies on the loose in the Democrat Party as Barack Obama tries to talk his party off the crazy ledge. I'll tell you why there's no chance that's going to work. It's only going to backfire on Democrats as we continue along the show here. This is a great time, by the way, a great time to get over to Tri-County and see my friends at Tri-County Auto. I love the great people at Tri-County Auto. I'm so proud of the fact that they are our official car sponsor of the show. Brian Krieger, his general manager, Jack, great guy, great people over there, and easy to get to from wherever you are. 422 Limerick, easy to get to. Collegeville, King of Prussia, Philly, the Main Line, Jersey, wherever you are, it's easy to get to. So go see them today. Now, they got great specials going on right now. Toyota-thon is in full swing. That's right, Toyota-thon. You know, you always see the commercials for Toyota-thon. So what can you get at Tri-County Auto right now? Well, you can buy or lease a new 2025 RAV4 LE all-wheel drive for just $299 a month for 39 months. You can buy and get 4.75% financing for 72 months. Or you can check out a new 2025 Tacoma four-wheel drive double cab SR5, at least that baby, for $229 a month for 39 months. You get rates as low as 2.99% for 48 months. Just amazing specials at tricounty.com. And they also have Tri-County Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram. And they've got their year-end sales event going on right now as well. Great specials on things like the Jeep Compass, for example. Dodge trucks. I mean, hey, listen, you want to go something big. Doesn't get bigger than a Dodge truck, and they're beautiful, and they're great, and they're spacious. And the wrap up the year sales event that's happening right now, for example, a 2025 Jeep Grand Cherokee Altitude X for just $363 a month for 36 months. So just go see them. That's the best thing to do, or check out the inventory online at tricounty.com. But here's what I know. You'll have good people taking great care of you, honest and no pressure. and our official car sponsor. So they stand with this show, and that means everything, and it should mean everything to you as well. All right? So go see them today. TriCounty.com, TriCounty Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram, TriCounty Toyota. Two great dealerships under one big, gigantic American flag. You cannot miss it between the two dealerships. TriCounty.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All righty. So Venezuela, that is the question right now. What's going on with that blockade? And look, you know, I am not a fan of getting involved in these situations. I feel like there's unintended consequences that happen with these things that are not good. I'm not a fan of regime change. I'm not a fan of any of this stuff. I want to get rid of Maduro as much as the next guy. I think the problem, though, is that whenever we do these things right now, we just don't know what's going to occur. The good news, like I said earlier, is that we're not dealing with a nuclear superpower here. So there's that. But the president ordered a total and complete blockade of all sanctioned oil tankers entering and leaving Venezuela. This is because he wants to get rid of Nicolas Maduro. He said Venezuela is completely surrounded by the largest armada ever assembled in the history of South America. U.S. warships, planes, and thousands of troops deployed to the region. And he threatened the U.S. military presence would only get bigger, and the shock to them will be like nothing they've ever seen before unless Maduro's regime returned oil, land, and other assets that they have previously stolen from us, an apparent reference to Venezuela's nationalization of U.S.-linked holdings in the country. In recent weeks, Trump has threatened to carry out land strikes in Venezuela. It's unclear how many tankers would be affected and to what extent the U.S. military would be involved in implementing such a blockade. The White House did not immediately respond to a request for comment. This comes days after we seized a tanker full of Venezuelan crude, and the White House indicated there'd be more ship seizures. Now, perfect scenario. This plays out where Venezuela, you know, Maduro realizes that he's got no cards to play here. He can't beat us. They don't have nuclear weapons. Nobody's coming to their aid. And he leaves. He gives up power and he goes because, you know, that's that. Then we get a government friendly to the United States of America in there. Once you start threatening the country's economic interests, then that's much more likely to occur. That's, you know, that's the good news. That's the upside, obviously, to all of this. Venezuela said the president of the United States is trying to absolutely in an irrational manner to impose a supposed military naval blockade on Venezuela to steal the riches of our homeland. Venezuela will never go back to being a colony of the empire nor any other foreign power. A military blockade is considered an act of war, but Trump's move appeared to stop short of a full blockade. It appeared to exclude Chevron, which has been operating in Venezuela and exporting oil under a license exempting it from U.S. sanctions that the president renewed this year. On Tuesday, a Chevron spokesman said its operations in Venezuela were continuing without disruption and in compliance with the law. By targeting sanctioned vessels, the U.S. could be sidestepping prohibitions on economic blockades under international law, except in response to an armed attack. It is international law 101 that a military blockade is not just a violation of the UN Charter, but a crime of aggression, said Ryan Goodman, a law professor at New York University, unless that blockade is in response to an armed attack. So is it possible the president then tonight addresses the nation and says, we have decided that we are going to take an all-out effort to topple Maduro, impose a new regime, and we are now going to war with Venezuela? I mean, it's possible. I don't believe that's going to be the case, obviously. You know, people are comparing this to 1962 with President Kennedy stopping the Soviets. The reason why that was so perilous is we were at the very height of the Cold War, the very height of the nuclear threat. I mean, this is back in the days when our kids, well, maybe you, I don't know, you know, kids back then used to have to hide under their desks as they would practice for a nuclear missile strike. Because those school desks certainly would have protected you in the event of an all-out nuclear fallout. They were made that way back then. They're not made that way now. But back then, those desks, you know, you open the top, you had your books in there, some gum, slime, boogers, and those desks would also protect you from global thermonuclear war. Not many people realize that. I've done my research, though. The school desks today now are much less, they're low energy. You know what I mean? They can't absorb a nuclear strike. So it was good of the schools to make the kids practice that way and freak them out in the process that they could all, you know, die. The blockade ratchets up pressure on Maduro as the Trump administration continues its controversial bombing campaign of alleged drug smuggling vessels in the region. This is part of what we've talked about before, which is the Trump administration and the Trump doctrine, similar to the Monroe doctrine, of saying that the United States is going to essentially implement its foreign policy on the Western Hemisphere. The president accused Maduro's illegitimate regime of using oil from the stolen oil fields to finance themselves and to finance drugs, terrorism, human trafficking, murder, and kidnapping. He accused Maduro of leading a drug trafficking cartel that is that has designated as a foreign terrorist organization, a charge he denies. Under Maduro's mentor and predecessor, the late Hugo Chavez, Venezuela expropriated oil projects operated by Exxon and ConocoPhillips after the American companies rejected new contract terms that gave the Venezuelan government majority control over joint ventures, leading to lengthy court battles. Venezuela essentially seized those lands, seized the oil, seized the operations. But people close to Venezuela's government and oil analysts say they were puzzled by Trump's assertion that Venezuela had stolen land and oil from the United States. No country in the Western Hemisphere has ever suffered a blockade that shuts off its primary source of export revenue, said a Venezuelan economist at the University of Denver. I have no idea there was such a thing as a Venezuelan economist. He warned that the measure could trigger severe food shortages in the country of 28 million people. Obviously, 28 million people is not that big of a country. Venezuela doesn't have the kind of military that could really do much damage. But look, if, you know, if the goal here is a blockade, that's one thing. If the goal is escalation into an all-out invasion of Venezuela, then that's a whole other story. I don't think the support's there for that. I also don't think that's where we're going with this. But I can tell you there's a lot of chatter online because of this. Mainly because Tucker Carlson, I'm not saying that he's necessarily the source of this, but Tucker Carlson put out an interview earlier today, and he was asserting that people in close to Congress are telling him that that's what's going to happen tonight, and that the president's going to make that announcement that we are, you know, we are going to go into Venezuela and we're going to topple Maduro's regime. I can't imagine that that would be the case. I can't. I'd be shocked if that's what happens. But and I think that I just don't think the appetite is there for that. I really do. I don't think the appetite is there. And I would be shocked if that is, in fact, the case. I don't know if the president said anything about that earlier today. Here's what
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
He said he went to D.C., I'm sorry, Dover Air Force Base for the dignified transfer of the soldiers who were killed in Syria. And in receiving their remains, the president did do a quick scrum. Didn't last very long, but I didn't get a chance to listen to it. So I don't know if he addressed this or not. So let's take a listen together, shall we, and see if this comes up. It might give us a clue of what he's going to talk about tonight, if that is in fact the case. So let's take a listen.
All right, well, that was a beautiful event for three great people. They're now looking down, and their parents and wives and all of the people that were there were, devastated, but Great people. Great people. So thank you very much for being there. Yeah, she's doing a great job. The blockade, not going to let anybody going through that shouldn't be going through. You remember they took all of our energy rights, they took all of our oil from not that long ago, and we want it back, but they took it. They illegally took it. Oh, Dan did a great job. I think he wants to go back to his show. Yeah, I do. Getting land, oil rights, whatever we had, they took it away because we had a president that maybe wasn't watching. But they're not going to do that. We want it back. They took our oil rights. We had a lot of oil there. As you know, they threw our companies out, and we want it back. Well, I think the message this evening is we inherited a mess, and we've done a great job, and we continue to. And our country is going to be stronger than ever before very soon. Thank you very much, everybody.
Okay. So not much there other than what I told you already about in the article, which is that that's what the president wants back. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what he says. I mean, no way to predict exactly what's going to happen. That's the big story of the hour, brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your beautiful smile. And I was texting with Dr. Mike yesterday, as a matter of fact, and I realized when I got my appointment reminder, I have an appointment with him on New Year's Eve, as a matter of fact. So yeah, he really is my dentist, and I got to go for my cleaning and my checkup on New Year's Eve. So I have a beautiful smile on New Year's Eve night when I'm with my kids and the new dog, and we're just hanging out as a family with a new puppy, doing nothing but being together as a family with a new puppy. You can tell how incredibly excited I am. I'm really, really, really excited for that. Super, super excited. Anyway, VeneriaDental.com, 856-786-2020. The tanker seized on December 10th was carrying roughly $80 million of oil, equivalent to about 5% of what Venezuela spends monthly on imported goods, raising the prospect of shortages. More than likely, this would probably, if this keeps going, result in regime change. You know, guys like Maduro only survive because they are, they scare other people into not taking over. You know what I mean? It's not exactly a country that is governed by constitutional principles like the United States of America, and that's being kind. So if other powerful interests, and there's a lot of them, with money, mainly oil people, decide you got to go, dude, then, you know, he'll get a poison pound cake or a couple of the bad. I mean, that's how it works. And that's probably what will ultimately be the result of this, is that he'll die of a heart attack in his sleep or something like that. That's probably what happens. If I'm a betting man, I'm betting that. I doubt this leads to World War III, and it leads to regime change and us invading Venezuela. I doubt it. And like I said, I don't think the appetite's there from the American people on that. I really don't. I just I think we've all kind of had it with that. And part of the reason why we supported President Trump was because we just didn't want regime change anymore. We just didn't want the same kind of policies happening. If it's a blockade and it goes nowhere beyond that, I think the American people would be fine with that. They'll have patience for that. If it escalates beyond that, then I think that support will evaporate very quickly. That's my analysis of that situation. Interestingly enough, John Fetterman has come on board, though, breaking ranks with Democrats in supporting not only blowing up drug boats, but also the president's blockade on Venezuela. Fetterman is a unique cat, man. He really is. He's you never know with John Fetterman where he's going to go on these things. But he came out and surprised a lot of people on this, as Chuck Schumer is screaming that this is all being done to hide from the Epstein files. I don't know how this hides from the Epstein files. I don't get that. I mean, you could have a legitimate debate about whether or not this blockade is something that should be authorized by Congress. You could have a debate about whether or not this blockade should be happening in the first place. But to have an argument that this is all being done to deflect and distract from the Epstein files, and what? What does that have to do with anything? But that's what Chuck Schumer is alluding to. That's what he's saying right now, that this is all a cover for that. So here's the Senate Minority Leader, Chuck Schumer, cut number five. Take a listen.
So look, 27 days ago, every single senator sent Donald Trump a clear and simple message: release the Epstein files. Congress passed a law, not a suggestion, not a request. The law requires DOJ to release the files by Friday, December 19th. In 3 days, President Trump has a choice: follow the law and release the files, or break the law and continue to hide the truth from the American people. Let me be blunt. We fully expect Trump, Bondi, and their minions to dodge, delay, or partially release these files. If they release some documents and hide others, the American people will see right through it, and they'll ask the obvious question. We are all asking the obvious question that looms. President Trump, what are you trying to hide?
Okay. All right. That's enough. Thank you. Thank you. We'll come back to that. Yes. Thank you, Matt. The rumor is that Maduro will be the other option, of course, in addition to getting two in the back of the head and a pound cake that's poisoned, is that he winds up fleeing to a place like Qatar, however you say it. He's got a house there, or a penthouse, or a townhouse, or something, and that's where he winds up going. All right, Bob's Little Sports Shop. Great people over there at Bob's. They'll take great care of you, and they'll make sure that you're very, very happy this holiday season, because they're open Christmas Eve for you last-minute shoppers out there, and Bob's gift cards make great gifts, and for every $100 you spend, you get $10 in Bob's Bucks that you can use all throughout 2026. Bob's Little Sports Shop is my go-to shop for all things Second Amendment, and they got great gear, the best selection of firearms anywhere, and NRA certified instructors who will help you learn how to properly use a firearm. Find the best firearm for you, and you'll be thrilled. It also makes a great place to have a gathering, company retreat, get together with your friends, catch up after the new year. No alcohol or drugs permitted on premises, but you need no experience necessary. You don't need a firearms ID card. Just go to the range, learn to shoot, have some fun, and a great time everybody will always remember. And think about getting those Bob's gift cards. Stop in on Christmas Eve if you need to. Use those Bob's Bucks for yourself in 2026. It'll be our little secret. Whether it's firearms, it's gear, it's ammo, it's coffee, they got a whole bunch of great, great selection for you. And you'll find the best people who support our Constitution, support our freedom. And for 60 years in New Jersey, they're doing something right. Family-owned, BobsLittleSportsShop.com. That's where you want to go. They're right off Delsey Drive in Glassboro, New Jersey. BobsLittleSportsShop.com. This ad sponsored by Bob's Little Sports Shop.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.